Go back to my favorite Demings. I think it's Demings that said
Deming.
this, but change is not necessary. Survival is not mandatory. And I think that the reduction in use of scaled frameworks at the enterprise level, the increase of no frameworks or creating our own, is a mark that.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good grief. It's another podcast from Enterprise Agility.
Hi, and welcome to another podcast on enterprise agility brought to you by the Agility Crew. Our crew consists of leading experts in the industry who give their knowledge freely to invest in the skills we all need. Now let's join our crew for this week's episode.
Well, good morning. Great to see everybody. It's Ian from rainy Sheffield.
It's Ricardo, straight from Riga.
Maria from New Jersey.
And my office is raining, and I hope it's not coming across too loud on the podcast, but we have to record, so we'll get on with it. So today's episode is a chosen subject from Maria. Over to you. Tell us what you want to talk about. It's a lovely topic, by the way.
Thank you. I've been reading the 17 State of Agile report, and there's some interesting trends in there. I thought it would be interesting to get our thoughts on.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I found it through an article that was comparing some of the statistics in the 16th State of Agile report, which came out in 2022, and this year's, the 17th. And there's a decrease in some trends that I found interesting. So last year, 72% said that they were satisfied with Agile practices in their company. This year, that's dropped to 59% satisfaction of Agile practices. And another bit that I found interesting in there is the use of scaled frameworks, where we see even more drops. So SAFe, Scaled Agile Framework for Enterprise, is down by 27%.
Yes. Oh, sorry.
Ricardo, you're not meant to cheer.
I'm a big fan of killing zombie Scrum. You know my opinion about SAFe.
Well, maybe reserve your excitement. Well, enterprise Scrum, lean
all
management,
scaling methods
Spotify,
are possible.
Large scale Scrum, collectively, and Agile portfolio management collectively decreased by 23%. So it's not just the SAFe that's seeing a drop. It
okay,
is
so
many
they've all
enterprise
seen
frameworks.
A drop. They've all seen a drop. Okay.
No. I think I looked at the statistics. There was one that went up.
There's two. So created our own is up from 0 to 12%, and don't use a framework at the enterprise level is up from 0 to 22%.
Wow.
So that's 34% of people that are getting smart.
That's smart. A good way to see it. But the golden question, why do we think this is the trend that's manifesting in our industry?
That is a really deep question with lots of things to say on that. So let's make that the whole of this podcast, because I think it's a great subject. Let's go through it together and work out what we think. On the previous podcast, I mentioned something a friend of mine said to me as well, which is he said, are we selling a secret sauce or is it really snake oil? And I think, honestly, I suspect when he said that to me, I thought, if you think it's really a secret sauce, you really think it's good, you'll put your effort in, you'll try very hard, you'll work hard, you'll commit to what you're doing. If you really think it's snake oil, what you'll do is you'll try and sell more and more snake oil. Possibly one of the things that's happened is those elements of our industry that are snake oil salesmen are getting caught out. And that's probably one of the reasons why there is a clear industry pullback from some of the scaling methods, because honestly, some of the people that do them can't do them well. I think that's probably true. I mean, without sounding too judgmental, we've got an industry that half of the people who do it are, you know, shall I say, self-certified cowboys, and half are trying to do it well. I doubt there's another industry that's so well paid with so little certification and track for being qualified completely in it. I mean, I think, again, another friend of mine who's head of Agile for a large consultancy said there's no other industry that pays so much and has so little qualifications to get to the pay. So some of that, I think, is going on. Am I being unfair? I don't know. But that's what I think, really. Some of it is definitely we've been caught out. I think there was a lot of the scaling frameworks, you got into them quite easily. If you needed to scale and you needed to improve your job and you need to get more money, you could certainly get certified in the scaling frameworks quite easily. And that didn't mean you had all the scars in your back from doing the work. It just meant you could follow a book. And I'll say this again later, I think, but one size does not fit all. You know, I don't go to the doctor and always insist, whatever the problem is, I always have one tablet. I don't go and say, I've broken my leg, can I have some oxycetylene, please? Oh, I've damaged my head, can I have some oxycetylene? Oh, my arm's broken, can I have some oxycetylene, please? Oh, I've got this. I don't know why we think all industries, all segments, all kinds of sizes, one size fits all. I don't know why we think it at all. So that's my starter for 10. What do you think of that, guys?
Yeah. No, I think if you look at the Agile Industrial Complex and you think about the typical length of engagement of one of the big five, we saw a big rise in SAFe and in Spotify like 3 to 5 years ago. That was the start of those engagements. And the gig is over. We need to sell the client something new. We cannot sell them another Agile implementation. So there is a less push for implementing one of the frameworks. And frameworks are a good starter. But A, like you were saying, if they are implemented for people without the stars on their belt, they're going to fail. And it's not about the framework. It's about the company making a journey in the direction of agility. The framework could be used to start it, but if all you do is start it and then don't nurture it, after 3 to 5 years, I'm not very surprised that half the companies are dropping off of it. I also heard that last year the survey was done at the SAFe conference. That's why the number was so high.
Oh, that's another reason. That could be interesting. Yeah. What you're saying there, Ricardo, is really interesting, was that the sales engines around the big ones, the ones that are used by the big four consultants and things, they've got to sell something new. They can't repeat the sale of 5 years ago. So they're moving
especially
on.
Especially if the project failed.
Yeah. Well, it does. It fails, and therefore they can't say, take this again. Because as I said, if I went to the doctor and he said, take oxycillin again, and I go, you know, you give me that 3 times, it doesn't work. You got anything else?
Yeah.
So what you're saying is the industry is tuning around looking for the next big thing. Taking over from, and I guess the next big thing, some of it's flow for sure. There's some of that going on. I think we're returning a little bit to the old days of lean. Is going on as well. Efficiency, maybe. We'll talk about that a bit later as well. I love your point, though. That's very good. Yeah.
And I do like your point, Ian, too. It's the certification. Is the certification enough? And I've heard of this term, the Agile Industrial Complex. Often used to describe the level of SAFe and the expense of SAFe certifications that you have to get to really get maximum value out of the framework. I wonder if the barrier of entry for Scrum Masters and Agile coaches is too low. I personally feel that 2 days of training is not enough. I've been in 2-day trainings where I want more, and my feedback is this should be a 5-day training. This should be a multi-week training. And the training is based on the quality of the instructor. The certification.
And the material.
Yeah, the requirements is, you know, you have the learning outcomes and you have to, as the instructor, come up with a proposal on how you're going to teach those learning outcomes. But how is that governed? How is the quality assurance happening on those certifications and the quality of the instruction and the content of the course? So I personally believe it needs to be a boot camp. Would you feel comfortable going to a doctor to perform surgery on you that has not completed their residency, that hands-on experience in the moment? So I believe there needs to be better training, and I think there needs to be more prerequisites and an application process for training that vets candidates to have some degree of qualification before even pursuing training.
That's really good.
Can I add a couple of things?
Go on, you first, Ricardo, then me. I want to tell the story. What should I tell mine first? Yeah. So when I first learned from Jeff Sutherland how to do Scrum, I went on a Scrum Master course, got 2 days of Scrum from him, got certified, came back, started to run a very large project. But I had been a senior program manager for a while, so that wasn't unusual. But we decided to do Agile. So I sort of interviewed for lots of Agile people. Everyone who came honestly, there was a problem. And I rang Jeff up and said, here's the problem, Jeff. I'm getting people who can tell me what the book says. That's all they can do. What am I doing wrong? You know, it's not working. He went, what you need to do, Ian. So it was a problem for me. He said, what you need to do, Ian, is look past the book into what scars and experience they have in their lives. And, you know, ask difficult questions like, where has it not worked for you? And certainly another friend of mine, who's head of Agile for a very large consultancy, goes, three circles. Matt, I mean, we've done this on the podcast before. One of them is qualifications, but the other two are skills and experience. And, you know, he would say, there's no such thing as a good Scrum Master who hasn't had 5 years of experience. So 2 days of training, 5 years of experience to get it right, to be good at it, to be really good at it. I had to tune all my interviews and everything to get this right, because I've made the mistake that a lot of people make, which is 2 days of certification means you're an expert. And yet in the industry, we eschew the idea of expert. We say, oh, don't want to be an expert. We're all learners. But yes, I have this certification, I have this certification, I have this certification. Now, I agree, Maria, what you said about quality of training as well, because let's look at the two big training ones. And I obviously, full disclosure, I do lots and lots of training using the IC Agile system. That's where we met, etc. So there's a difference.
Ian is a part of the Agile industrial complex. Maria, we just found out.
Said with a distorted voice. Okay. Cheers, mate. So,
yeah.
I'm SAFe certified, SPC as well. So, the SAFe ones, how they do quality is the slides have to be the same slides. That's the quality. The quality is in the knowledge content, if you see what I mean. And therefore, anyone can, once you've got the certification, can teach the Agile from SAFe, because you have to just read the slides out. That's it. The IC Agile one is a different thing. Learning outcomes, you mentioned, Maria, you've been on my course. So, you know, learning outcomes, things like that. Quality is an entirely different thing. What you're measuring in IC Agile is the quality of the person doing the course and not so much the content they show. So, you know, the questions, you know, I know you got asked at the end of our courses were things like, what was Ian like? Did he present well? What did you think of the material? All of those things are in there. So it's a different thing. So I'm a great believer in certification. I must say I am. But whenever there's this debate about, well, what does certification give you? I always say the same thing, which is we're all certified. Some of us are certified by ourselves and others are certified by a trusted body. And I know which I prefer. Sorry, I've gone on a bit. I do apologize. You're quite right. I am part of the vested interest industrial complex on this subject. Watch out for my latest video training course on ChatGPT and how to use it for your job. Coming soon. Sorry about that. Let's move on.
You're changing it from within. You're evolving the system from within.
Yeah, but let me take that from another angle. A couple of things you said, Maria. One of them is the barrier of entry is too low. It's too low in quality many times, and it's too high in price. I think individuals are paying a lot of money to get very poor training, except in the case of Ian. Ian is doing some really good stuff.
Thank you very much. I know that's not true, but thank you for saying
yeah,
that is true.
You're the only one that I bothered attending one of the trainings, so that could be.
That is the recommendation.
Show a compliment.
You actually paid for some training from me, as opposed to no one else in the world. Yeah. Thank you very much, my friend.
Yeah. But from another point of view, there is a space for people that are just out of a certification in an Agile transition, but not doing an Agile transition only with people that are just out of certification. When I'm preparing an Agile transition team, I like to have a bit of new blood. I like to have a few people that were never part of an Agile transition, but are certified and have new knowledge and will come up with new ideas, but only as 30% of the team. And then I need 30% of the team with some deep scars who have gone through a failed one, who have gone through a successful one, and then a few other people that have at least gone through one. So it is all in setting up the right Agile transition team.
All right, let's make this really simple. Go ahead, Maria, sorry.
Oh, no worries. I like the balance that you called out, because when I reflect back on my own career, I didn't start with training. I had the title of project manager. So I said I wore the project management costume in front of stakeholders and leadership, but with the teams, I was very much a scrum master. And so not having had some scars actually means I didn't have any bias. I had more enthusiasm to try things that other people had seen fail time and time again. And I like to lie to myself and say that my enthusiasm was infectious. I was like that, you know, bushy-tailed, rosy-cheeked, like, no, we're going to do this. We're going to deliver the value. Come on, guys. And then I had some success out of pure sheer luck. And maybe not having had the scars, did it focus my attention on where it is working and allowed me to capitalize on that expense because I didn't have as much trauma inherent in me that was obscuring my perspective. And so having a balance of some people that are greener, that are very enthusiastic, very motivated to try it again, despite it failing over and over again, with people that have the battle scars that can, you know, say, no, you're about to drive off the cliff. That's not going to work. Or, hey, you really want to try something? I love the enthusiasm. Here's where I've seen it go wrong. Don't let this deter you from trying. Just let it be part of your awareness so that when you're deterred or when you hit this situation, you know that it's not your specific application, that this is just like a sticky, challenging area. And so having that balance of really green, enthusiastic folks and some seniors with a bunch of battle scars and wounds that might still be healing creates this, like, I hate to use that buzzword, but it creates a beautiful synergy that might enable us to go even further.
Yeah,
well said.
You have a bunch of people that are willing to jump off the cliff and a few that know how to put a harness on them and hold them and bring them back.
So, I mean, the whole talk on this called squads and squads. And the idea of football, you know, you don't want a team of 16-year-olds, but you don't want a team of 34-year-olds. You need to blend. You need it. What does the young end of the spectrum need? Enthusiasm, smiley faces, willingness to get stuck in. What do the more experienced ones need? There's a great word that's come out into the English language this year called perseverance, which is the mix of perseverance and
resilience.
And at the top of the range, you know, you definitely need that. In fact, you know, that's one of the things I've recently talked to the company about, which is this idea that, you know, in the end, the system will get you unless you actually know how to hold yourself and handle yourself and keep your perseverance and your resilience high. So a bit of a mix of those is needed. But you're dead right. I mean, I look back at some of the best times I've had when I've had young, enthusiastic, very talented, very bright people, so infectiously infused. You know, I used to go and stand in the coffee queue at one place to get a coffee. And this guy who was one of the team would just come up to me, stand in the queue with me and say, teach me something, Ian, please. I mean, you just want to be with people like that, don't you? You know, while I'm getting a coffee, you know, and it was always if you pay for the coffee. So, yeah, brilliant stuff. So, yes. So have we gone off topic too much? I don't know. So essentially we're saying that industrial complex, the way the sort of systems feeding itself isn't helping because we're producing scrum masters and coaches at the junior level who haven't got the scars, who haven't been there. In fact, you will know because the first thing I say in any of my training courses, I'm not a trainer who sort of just trains for a living. I've got all the scars. We're going to talk about all that. And I think you need more of those kind of people who go, yep, I've got every scar. But if that person with all those scars goes, it'll never work. I've been there. There's nothing to do here. Let me just make it easy for myself. You're into snake oil, aren't you?
Yeah. But if you go back to the industrial complex, remember the big five don't sell just agility. And what they sell is connected to which part of the economic cycle we are in. And a few years ago, we were clearly in an expansion phase. And in an expansion phase, companies want to become more effective. They want to be faster. But we are now in a phase of a lot of doubt, maybe a recession ahead, maybe not. And that's the moment where the CEOs of the companies will say, I need to become not more effective. I need to become more efficient. I need to lower costs. And Agile is not the recipe sold by these companies to lower costs, layoffs and other things. Reorganizations are what you do to lower costs. So this could be something that is also not directly related to the Agile, but related to the macroeconomic and consulting of executives' environment.
Okay, so here's my question.
How much of that is herd mentality?
Yeah, yeah, it is herd mentality. But before we get to that, can I ask one question? Ricardo, if it's no longer an expanding market to sell Agile, I could really ask this question of the head of agility for Accenture, who I know. Maybe we'll get him on a podcast and talk to him about it. If it's no longer that to sell, what is it they're selling? For efficiency?
Mostly reorganizations.
Is it lean stuff? Is it reorg and lean and job cuts?
No, I see a lot of companies going back to more functional-oriented organizations where you have a bunch of testers with a manager that is testers, shared service centers, shared resources between teams. So the whole thing goes a bit against agility, and it's hard to pitch agility if you're going to have some shared resources. But that's the direction I see the different companies I'm working with being told to go to, and some of them going in that direction and some saying no, we're quite all right.
So if there was a trend in the past to experiment with new modern holacracy, all of those new ways of organizing, what you're saying is there's an urge to go back to the functional matrix management kind of style because it's seen to be more efficient in local optimization. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
This is a pendulum effect.
Pendulum.
Then things get too expensive. Efficiency. Then things get too slow. Then effectiveness to speed up things. And that cycle in companies depends on the company. It can be a 3, 6, or 10-year cycle, but almost every company has it because you usually go too far in one direction. And you try. The other thing that is wrong is you try to go with everyone in the same direction instead of taking into account that different teams, different areas of the company, different markets, different customer segments might need to focus more on effectiveness or efficiency.
Whatever your market needs, whatever your ecosystem needs, not whatever the big industrial agile complex is saying you should have. Okay. Maria, can I ask you to pop
it's also
your mic
a symptom
up a bit,
of HR.
Your mic is a bit
and it's
low.
Also part of the success of Agile was being taken over quite a bit by HR in many companies, but then HR doesn't want to do 20 different directions across the company. Well, when we started Agile, it was much more something that was done at the group or department level. So that could be another reason.
Okay. Sorry, Maria, we both interrupted you. I think I've asked you to put your mic up for that reason because I think it was a bit low. Please go ahead.
I interrupted Ian while he was interrupting you.
That's okay. It's a good subject.
That one canceled out.
The pendulum effect is something that I want to hone in on for a couple of minutes because it's a binary state. It's one or the other based on the way we've been discussing it so far. What appealed to me about Agile is you get to have both. You get to expand in an efficient way.
Oh, okay.
And you get to become more efficient in an expansive way.
Ooh.
That's the beauty of lean.
Very good.
And so are we doing right by our organizations if we're choosing one over another?
If you are not growing your top line, doing Agile with cross-functional teams, you will normally need more people to achieve. If you're just designing an organization, you will need more people to achieve something with cross-functional teams than with a functional organization. The problem is functional organizations don't work well in an unpredictable environment, in an environment with a lot of change. So if you're looking at it from an HR perspective and you see I have the function of testing, the function of developing, the function of project management, and you try to come up with two structures with the same throughput, and you don't take into consideration the rate of change on the outside, the organization with the functional organization is like 30% smaller than the cross-functional organization.
Hmm.
We know that Agile works better. But Agile doesn't work better if what you are doing is producing the same nail every single day. There you want a purely functional organization, you want specialization, you want Taylorism. So if you are doing It's the same thing as, don't companies stop to invest in research and development when there is a contraction? And the very few companies that come out of that recession and become winners were the ones that kept investing in research and development. So Agile is quite similar to Agile is an investment in speed, just like marketing, just like research and development, they are investments in the future.
So right now, the keen companies are going to be doing those kind of things ready for the future. As they say, invest during the curve, accelerate. That's the golden rule in this, isn't it? You accelerate during the curve, not afterwards. That's how you keep yourself ahead. So we're saying that's going on. Okay.
Marie, so some smart companies are going to come out really smarter on the other side.
Yeah, because they know, even though they're constraining and contracting, they are also doing the right things to invest. I think what you said, Maria, about both at the same time is true within the industry. But if you look at why the industry is constraining at the moment, I think a lot of that is to do with the cycle that people are in and the view at CFO level that it is either or. I think it is either or. And during our research and chat before we recorded, you talked about the herd mentality that you'd seen as well. Can I ask you to mention that again? And we'll move from there because we're at 25 minutes now already.
So, I've been doing a lot of research and reading this week. The other article that I read was from Stanford University here in the States, and it examined why are there so many layoffs in tech right now? And it stipulated that it's imitation behavior, basically. It's that herd mentality that I mentioned. Paraphrasing the article's evidence against layoffs is that they do not cut costs. There is evidence to show that doing a layoff will not improve your company's performance because layoffs increase the unemployment insurance rates. It cuts the workflow, the workplace, which reduces the morale. And layoffs also decrease the productivity and morale in remaining employees as they wonder, am I next? And as they start to hedge their bets, maybe look somewhere else, maybe update their resume instead of, you know, taking a risk. Maybe they don't take risks at all because how will this be perceived despite it being the right thing to do for the customer or for the company or the market? And so the article concluded it is imitative behavior. Perhaps we're seeing the same with agility. Oh, agility didn't work because they did safe, and we don't understand all the variables that were at play which caused safe to fail. Maybe they didn't even need a scaled framework in the form of safe in that situation. But none of that is part of our analysis when we wonder whether agility works or not. And we ignore evidence of what does actually work, what doesn't work. And where we do pay attention to evidence, I think we don't examine what variables are in play that contribute to success or failure. Because we want an easy answer.
Are you saying that the Agile market expanded under copycat and it's constraining now under copycat? I think you are. I think that's what you're saying.
That's
herd mentality
hypothesis.
Has done both. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Let me defend the layoffs. We always need to put ourselves on the other side of the fence, by the way.
Of course.
If no one else is doing layoffs and you do layoffs, you're going to lose the best people that you have. Because those people, especially if you announce a layoff, at that moment they start looking for jobs. But if everyone is doing layoffs, it's the only case where you can keep your best people because they have no other place to move to easily. And you can actually lay off the poor performers. I know this is a very Jack Welchian approach, but this is a phenomenon that happens.
Can I just say congratulations on saying Jack Welchian? That's a great phrase. I like it a lot. Thank you. I don't think I've ever heard it said like that before. Jack Welchian. Yay. Yeah. I think you're right. So that's what you're saying. You're saying essentially, you know, if you're the first to jump onto redundancies, you'll lose your best because they'll move. But if everyone's doing it.
If you want to do redundancies, the time to do is when everyone else is doing it.
Okay.
Not that I'm defending layoffs, but I do believe that we need to take a look at both sides of every topic.
Okay. 28 minutes. We ought to think about stopping. Can I suggest we all think of the main thing we want to say as we finish and summarize, and I'll get the soundboard and everything ready, and let's hope it works. And I need to go to outros. So I think the big thing for me, there's lots of really beautiful detail. That headline of the withdrawal to 26%. On scaling is just a big thing to see. I take Ricardo's point about probably the previous was a high point and artificially high. Without a doubt, though, that's a constraining, isn't it? And reacting to that across the market is what's needed. And good people, I mean, I have a friend who's a finance, works in the city, and he says, bear or bust market, good people make it. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the market trends are. Good people make it throughout. And I think that's what the message I want to give us all. That's my message. What's yours? Let's ask Ricardo. What's your big thought from what we've chatted through?
Well, mine is the lovely 13% of companies that are rolling out their own framework, and the 22, I believe, which are using no framework, because I believe that's exactly the outcome that we want. Just like you don't want to set up a Scrum team and come after 1 year and they are doing exactly the same meetings and doing some kind of zombie Scrum after a year. You also don't want the company to be stuck in a framework. I think a framework can be a good place to start. So we might be actually seeing some positive evolution in agility when companies come up with their own framework or decide to go framework free.
I was already thinking of that word evolution, you know, that classic quote we all quote from Origin of the Species, it's not the strongest. It's the ones that can
survival
adapt.
Survival of the fittest.
Are we actually seeing a moment of adaption going on right now? In that figure of 20% picking up their own way of doing it. Probably. Yeah. Maria, what's your big thought? Anything you want to add as we finish?
I go back to my favorite Demings. I think it's Demings said this, but change is not necessary. Survival is not mandatory. And I think that the reduction in use of scaled frameworks at the enterprise level, the increase of no frameworks or creating our own, is a mark that we are embracing change. And I take this as a call to action, really an empowering mission statement for myself, is that I have to hone my craft even further. I can't just open up a guide and sell it to a company or to solve a problem. I have to actually deepen my understanding of the problem and the variables that are at play and co-create the solution with the people that I'm working with, using the library to become inspired and to serve as a guideline of what might not work or what might work. So experiment, experiment, experiment. That's my takeaway.
If I was still running my soundboard system, you'd have got some cheers for that, because that's spot on. But I noticed Ricardo was slightly clapping in the background as well. We didn't want to stop your talk, but spot on, spot on. All right, we're at the end of half an hour.
I think it is a craft.
It is a craft, yeah. You're quite right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Right, okay, let's do our outros. So it's goodbye from Ian in rainy Sheffield.
And goodbye from Riga by Ricardo.
Until next time, from Maria in New Jersey.
That's it for this episode. Why not check
out
our back
catalog of
previous
of the bobbing heads.
Show notes? Go to enterpriseagility.info to connect and sign up. See you next time on the Enterprise Agility Mastery Podcast.
Today was the return of the bobbing heads.
All right, we're done, I think. I'm going to take that off.